Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Mira Software Services, 1,500 software geeks in Western Russia, who provide engineering support for IP telephony, networking, and unified communication. Details at mera.biz or 650-479-5350.
It is Saturday, January 11th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm Bonnie Primsch in the host chair today. And with me in the studio is Lyle Troxell, an optimist, technology and art geek, and programmer at Netflix Now. Congratulations,
hey.
Lyle.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah. And Ben Jaffe, a technology teacher, musician, and web developer. Hello to you, Ben.
Good morning.
And today we're going to be talking about things coming up in 2014, technology trends, things we can expect to see more of in the coming year. What trends shall arise in 2014, gentlemen?
You know, we forward promoted the show a bit over the last month, kind of saying, you know, we're going to close out the year with what happened in 2013 that's important, and then we're going to talk about the future in 2014. Right. And of course, every other, you know, tech geek space did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So there's all these predictions. Of course, predictions are about as useful as old dog hair. You know, it's like, it doesn't really have a lot of value in some sense. But because there's so much talking about what's going to happen, what's important, and we have a pretty technical understanding about a lot of these things, mm-hmm. sometimes it's nice to chew into a little bit more depth. So I'm hoping that that's a bit about what we do, why the technology is at the point where it's important, yeah. and how it'll affect us. So that's the kind of the idea, at least. Let's
right.
see how we do.
More than just a listicle, welcome to Geek Speak.
Can I also talk about our fears with this show?
Yeah.
Here it is. And everybody can judge us on this.
Okay.
We have a lot of stuff to potentially cover, yeah. and it's all of our opinions, right? We're just going to be blabbing on about our yeah. opinions. So I'm concerned that it will sound like a rambling and incoherent. So I'd love feedback after this from the audience at large. Let us know, you like this kind of thing, or do you want us to stick with more factual information?
Or yeah. even in the moment, if you have something to add to the conversation, there'll be a chance to do that too a little later on the show.
We could invite people on the entire time if we'd like.
That's
maybe
true.
Not. Okay.
Well.
Problem with the future is we don't have any fact to give in this episode at all. We only have, you know, like, oh, this well, is what has happened.
Contextual.
But, yeah, what has happened. That's, you know, I mean, 3 points make a plane.
But ultimately, if we're doing what's going to happen in 2014, it's pretty much entirely speculation.
Sure.
It's
But intelligent or informed. So let's start.
That's true. That's true. Well, we've had 11 days already in 2014.
That's right. I could predict all of that.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking that.
All right, so
let's start with kind of like the nuts and bolts, the hard kind of like tangible stuff.
Oh, okay.
The stuff.
Like devices and such?
Yeah, like devices and
like
stuff.
Like phones.
Okay. Yeah, Ben, you've got a whole starting stuff on phones. What's going to happen in 2014 on phones?
Are we still going to be calling them phones?
Yeah, are they phones? Smartphones.
Well, really, at this point.
So, I mean, we'll talk about this in a bit of we're moving in other spaces aside from just phones, right? Mm-hmm. It's strange. Before we had smartphones, we thought of phones as things that you may use to make phone calls. But now if you say, oh, my phone this, my phone that, that really means my personal pocket-sized computer, right? So, but we're going to be moving away from phones probably starting this year, and we'll talk about that in a bit. As far as the phones themselves, though, I don't see them going away. A lot of people are saying, like, oh, smartwatches, Google Glass, phones will be obsolete. I really don't think that's the case.
Right. As a Google Glass user for over half a year, it hasn't decreased my phone use by any means.
Interesting. Mm.
So it's increased your electronics use.
It's decreased my social acceptance. But people don't accept me as much. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's necessarily improved my phone, increased my phone use, but it definitely doesn't. It's not the same thing. It's kind of like a, well, yeah. Okay. I'm not that excited about any changes we're going to see in phones next year. You know, a new iPhone's going to come out in April, and it's going to be amazing and thin and flatter, and it'll probably still have a thumb sensor on it, but it's not going to be different.
You don't know April, right?
What's that?
April is a speculation.
Oh, I'm totally guessing.
Making stuff.
Yeah, we're doing predictions for it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So in April, there'll be a phone out from Apple that will be, you know, the thing is, it's going to be thinner, and it's going to
be
lighter, and it's going to last.
Yeah, can
who
I
cares,
hear you
right?
better on it?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, how much smaller does it need to be? Right?
Also, ever since we've moved away from phones being just phones, phones have decreased in their usefulness as phones.
Yes.
You know, like it's really a pain to dial a phone number on a smartphone. You have to find the app, you have to open up the app, and sometimes you need to hit another button to get away from your contacts view. It's just like it's not just a phone, and so I don't know why we still call them phones.
Yeah.
We could call
them
it's
the best way to call
devices
it.
Or have some other name.
And that's true that,
that
we communicate a lot more now with text messaging than we did 20 years ago because we didn't have text messaging.
Yeah,
right? So
that's true.
Now our short messaging happens through typed or spoken.
And then we have email, and then we have all these other things that are not just not texting.
I have found that in 2013 I used less email, and I'm assuming that I will decrease my use of email.
Yeah. You know, I use texting a lot more than email, at least in 2013. Mm-hmm. I also use texting a lot more than email. And that really bums me out because email is pretty much free. But if you have a pay-as-you-go phone plan, text messages are extraordinarily expensive. They
you know, I did switch to Net10 from AT&T the last few months.
Yeah.
And I've been using that. And that's a cheaper plan, and you get unlimited texting and voice and data. And it's not been as yummy and wonderful and full of peaches as I was expecting. We'll do a later show on that, I think.
Yeah. I want to hear about that.
But having unlimited text, knowing that I can send as many texts as possible is all I want, is kind of nice.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't cost the carrier anything.
No, of course not.
As far as actual phones, I imagine we're going to see larger screens, especially on, like, I'm just going to make a guess here. I have no idea, but I would hope at least that the iPhone gets a slightly larger screen. I was thinking about moving to an iPhone, and I have a Galaxy S3, which has this nice big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the iPhone, and I felt like I don't wear glasses, but I felt like I needed glasses to use it because it was just really
compact. It's hard to go to a smaller screen, that's for
sure. It really is.
I had an iPhone 4 for a long time, and the 5's slightly longer than that, but the same width.
Yeah.
And then I went to a Nexus 5, and that's what I'm using now, which is a very big phone. And the now looking at an iPhone looks too small to me. But before, I was very happy. In fact, I said on the show, why would you ever want a bigger phone in your pocket? You know, they're annoying.
Yeah. Until you have a bigger phone in your pocket, you don't really know.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And also, I got to say that I think at this point, now that I've got a tablet that kind of goes with me most of the time, I'd much rather work on a tablet device in general, emailing, searching the web, than on an iPhone size or phone size thing.
I mean, are things going to be
even smaller?
Well, I wonder if they'll separate out again at some point. It doesn't make sense to have the tablet be your phone. You know, although it's better for the emailing and the texting, or perhaps. So, you know, is that where the wearable tech is going to come in?
Those
little watch phones that we're seeing now.
It's interesting, as you know, as I've had glass, some of the things that I normally would do on a phone would make it so important, like text messaging, actually occurs on my face instead. So when I receive a text message or an email directly to me that gets filtered out through Google to say it's actually important, mm-hmm. it shows up on my screen, on my face pretty quickly. And if I need to do a short response, I'll do it through voice. So I'll never even look at my phone. I don't need a big screen for that.
I've gotten some really funny text messages from you through...
It's like, are you collecting them?
Hi, this is Pyle here. How are you? You know, it's just really
the garbling
weird
is still
disjointed.
Big.
I wish I had one of them.
You have no idea how many times I've sent a message to you and then canceled it and tried again and canceled it and tried again.
Well, I'm glad it's working out for you.
Oh, yeah, it's working great.
So I definitely believe that 2014, we're going to see, well, of course, we're going to see improvements in most most spaces. But one that I'm excited about that has to do with phones and glass and smartwatches and any of these other wearable tech that connect to a wireless network is natural language search and speech recognition.
Yeah.
Gosh, I hope they work on that. Yeah. I really do.
And, I have an Android phone and I text using my voice all the time. Not when I'm driving, just when I'm walking around. I'd rather talk into it than type with a little keyboard, even though I have a big screen.
For searches or for what?
For texting. Mm-hmm. It's actually really good.
For some reason, my device is not working. I can't get my... You need to help me after the show.
Yeah.
Tech support. I can get it for searching, but I can't get it for texting and such on my phone.
Yeah. And you have Android?
Yeah.
Interesting.
4.4, right?
And
you know, let's talk about natural language searching.
Sure.
Because this is the field of natural language processing, and it's been an old... It's a big field.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to read...
It's hard, too.
I'm going to read a bit of the Wikipedia entry about it. So natural language processing, sometimes called NLP, is a field of computer science, artificial intelligence, and linguistics concerned with the interaction between computers and human languages. As such, NLP is related to the area of human-computer interaction. Many challenges in natural language processing processing involved natural language understanding, that is, enabling computers to derive meaning from human or natural language input. Mm-hmm. That field is immense. It started in the 1950s. We know the Turing test, for example, is an example of this. In fact, the way we defined intelligence is being able to pass the Turing test, and that's a natural language interaction with a computer system or a person on the other side. And if you can't tell if the system on the other side processing your natural language is a human or a computer, then it's in some theoretical perspectives, it is intelligent in the sense that you have to accept that it's a being.
Yeah, the idea is that the computer can trick a human into thinking that it is a human.
Right. Just like you do to me.
And in order to do that, there are a couple things, right? There's one, like the bullets I just kind of mentioned at the beginning of this little segment, you've got the speech recognition. Right. Can the computer recognize when you say the word bottle? Does it understand that you're saying the word bottle? Can it connect the sound to the word bottle?
Right.
But then additionally, it can take that input and it can do some basic processing on it to figure out what you're saying, and then figure out, oh, it's more likely he said the word bottle than the word coddle or something
right.
like that.
Or
right.
Waddle.
Yeah. And so from that, you can derive a lot of meaning.
And the way this stuff is all happening at this point, what we see with natural language processing techniques and voice control systems in phones, like Siri, for example. Siri had a set of vocabulary that was very specific and then enhanced its vocabulary based off of context information about you. Google Now is doing that as well at this point, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that the more information they have about who you are and where you are and what you are, the better they're able to fine-tune that you were talking about bottle because you have a baby versus coddle because you have a baby. Oh, that's a tricky one.
Yeah,
that's
a tricky one.
And beyond that, also Google Now and Siri are concerned with getting you information right when you need it or even before you need it, right? So the idea is that your phone can figure out, oh, it's Saturday around 8 a.m., Ben. You're probably going to go drive to GeekSpeak.
Yeah.
Here's, you know, do you want
to
get directions? It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually woke up this morning and I swiped over to Google Now and it said directions to GeekSpeak. 40 whatever minutes, da 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 da, go. And so I hit go and I rolled out of bed and I came here.
Ben, you're so dedicated.
Whoa.
So
it's like a variation on that Pee Wee Rube Goldberg machine to get you started in the day. Just
yeah.
Have to go to Google Now.
Oh, the thing that puts you puts your pajamas on for you and stuff.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hey, let's talk about this more about this and the Internet of Things a little bit after a break. Gentlemen and ladies, you are listening to Geek Speak. And next time on the 7th Avenue Project, Navigating the Racial Divide in Everyday Life. This week's guest is Janae Desmond Harris, who writes the Race Matters column for The Root magazine. Janae discusses her own biracial background, why race is so hard for so many people to talk about, how she became an advice columnist, and tricky questions around racism, personal identity, interracial relationships, and more. Robert Polly hosts the 7th Avenue Project Sunday at high noon here on 88.9 KUSP. Right now, what you're listening to is Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the air room is Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. We're talking about what's coming up in 2014, and we haven't really talked about resolutions and just sort of our tech theme for the year.
Sure,
so maybe we could go over that too.
All right.
What do you think, Lyle? What do you think?
Well, I think that... I mean, I've got personal resolutions. I don't think I'm going to share on the air this year.
Right.
Maybe the first time since I've done the show that I won't be doing that.
Well,
but
how about,
I will do a recommendation. If you don't have a resolution,
yeah.
I think you should learn to program. And I've talked about this in the past a bit on the show. My personal feeling is that contributing in society at this day and age, being computer literate in the sense of how programming works is as important at some degree as learning to read. And because our world is so defined by text, by reading documents, it's also defined by computer programs. And getting a little bit of handle on that is important, especially people that are younger and up and coming in the world. I think that learning program is essential. So to do that, it's really quite simple. You go to code.org and you'll launch yourself into some learning experiences.
Okay, so a simple way to start your path into literacy in the computer realm.
Good.
It's as important as English language literacy is what you're
nice.
Saying. Okay. And how about for you, Ben?
And that's code.org.
Code.org. A recommendation for folks?
Well,
for
my recommendation would be everyone should learn to code, but Lyle just covered that, so I have a secondary one, right? That's a really good one. Like,
everyone, I hope you pick mine.
Everyone really should learn to code. That's so important.
Okay, wait. Pull away so you can't hear what I'm about to say. Let's see if I can predict what you're going to do. Okay. We're doing predictions today, right? So don't hear this.
All right.
I think Ben's going to talk about data backup.
Okay, Ben, come on back.
I don't have a geek mantra or philosophy.
Oh.
Good prediction.
Yes. No, that's not what it was.
You looked in the Google Doc. Okay, so my geek mantra or philosophy is everyone should back up their data because it's really easy to not. It's really easy to forget. It takes work. It takes paying attention to back up your data. And I'm even going to say on the air, I am guilty of this too. And I'm a geek. I talk about this all the time, and I'm guilty of this. And
I can't even go into how many things that I really good recommendations that you've gotten from you guys that I have not acted on.
Okay, let me add two things to this. First off, I recently lost data.
I
do not lose data most of the time. I was traveling, had some space problems. I moved content from one machine that does get backed up to something else prior to my backup happening. And that other thing, little memory stick, I have lost. I don't know what I've lost. Most likely backups of the WAV files of this show.
You physically lost the stick?
Little stick, yeah. It fell out of my pocket.
So it might turn up.
It might turn up. Yay! Because it actually exists somewhere.
Yeah.
Somebody has it.
It's around.
But, you know,
so if you found a USB file.
I think that the issue of backing up is going to be even harder. And this is why. Right now, I'm currently creating content on devices that auto-sync to the cloud, and then things happen to them up there. For example, Google has this image manipulation tool called Auto Awesome. That's part of the Google Plus system, which makes new content. Sometimes I edit slightly that content and recreate it up online. I don't get that in my backup strategy. It's actually on Google.
Yeah.
In fact, a whole bunch of my content's on Google, and I'm trusting... So I am not managing my own backup strategy.
I want to make it a little bit simpler because, you know, technically the stuff up in the cloud is not backed up, but by you. But realistically, Google is backing up everything that they have for you, because if Google loses even a little bit of your data, they have undermined the trust that their entire business model is based on.
Clinton.
So, but at the same time, you want to have your data somewhere other than a company that controls your data. You want to control your own data as well. That's becoming more and more difficult to do. But in terms of just not losing your data, not even going into the space of other companies and all of that stuff, all you have to do is make sure that any data that you have on your computer, on your hard drives or whatever, you also have somewhere else.
A second copy of it.
Yeah. So like in my situation, I have two hard drives inside of my laptop. And so one hard drive backs up to the other hard drive. So that feels like it's backed up. But the reality is, no, if I lose my laptop, I've lost the original and the backup.
Yes.
So then I have another hard drive, which I back up the not backed up hard drive and the backed up hard drive.
Copy.
So blah, blah, blah. I have a complex setup. But the point is, I have my data in two separate physical locations.
Yeah.
Do you think, Bonnie, the reason why people don't do this is because it sounds like that?
It sounds a little...
It's complicated, right?
It is. It's going down a rabbit hole.
It is hard. Yeah. But, you know, just make sure that your data is in two places. You can do it manually. You can do it however you want to.
But I'm not going to make recommendations for what type of service, but there are services out there that will... You can pay them, and they will back up your data to their cloud system.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those even have a concept of trust no one, which means you have to encrypt it, which means you have to really keep track of the encryption keys for it, but they can't access it. So there's quite a few features out there like that. If you're not doing a strategy and you keep on having your hard drive, you never really do it, you might consider getting one of these automated services because it'll just do it for you all the time. But it does cost money.
And actually, some of them don't cost money until you lose data. And then they charge you when they give you your data back.
Oh,
right?
That's very sneaky.
I know. But, you know, you go into it with your eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Here's the kicker, though. If you don't back up, I promise you, you will lose data. It might be tomorrow. It might be 5 years from now. If you're lucky, it might be 10 years from now. It's probably going to be within about 1 to 3 years.
How about this? You might have already lost data and you don't even know it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because your hard drive doesn't always tell you that things are problematic.
Yeah. And I mean, another, to make you even more afraid, like what?
This is New Year's resolution, right? How to be great in 2014. Oh,
I actually,
everything is doom and gloom.
I actually go a step further. I have my data on my laptop. I have my data on my backup. And then I also back up to a third hard drive, because if I have my backup hard drive and I don't back up for a couple months and it's sitting getting dusty or whatever, hasn't been turned on for a while, I lose my laptop, I go to restore it, and my backup hard drive doesn't work. Like, that would really suck, right? So
yeah.
So it's
wait,
kind
how,
of,
where does this end?
It's kind of
it's exactly. Like the Russian dolls. And just,
it really
infinite
is.
Russian
like
dolls.
And so I back up my data in 15 different places across the globe. No, so basically, it just depends on how much you value the data that's
so
on your machine.
That's actually a really important part of this. I think that like a full backup, like Bonnie, your laptop right now, your mm-hmm. your ThinkPad in front of you, mm-hmm. It's. You don't have a complete backup of that device. Even if you did everything you wanted, you probably would get some stuff off it. But you don't really care about the operating system itself. Who really cares, right? Yeah. It's going to be outdated in a few months anyway. So my perspective in thinking about backup is to think about the content of the data itself, and what happens if, you know, how could I possibly lose it? And I play that mental game with me all the time. So when I take my camera and I transfer my files from my camera to my computer, when I do that, I also duplicate those photos at the same time on another hard drive. Mm. Now, I keep those two things together in my laptop bag, mm-hmm. right? And then whenever I get home, I make sure to copy those into my other storage device, right? So it's a pattern, but I don't care about everything on my computer. I only care about those photos. So I try to think about each item. So that is a way of thinking about the content rather than this strategy or something. Just think about what the content is and what would happen if you lost it.
Mm-hmm. And it could be simple. I have a friend who had an enormous music collection, digital music collection, and he sent me a copy of it on a bunch of CDs at the time.
Yes.
It was very quaint.
Right. Getting it to a friend
but
is
then,
really good.
But then, you know, it's like then his place burns down. I still have his music.
The really tricky thing about all these backup strategies is you really should not rely upon the backup as being a valid use, a valid copy, because it's very likely that one of those CDs is bad. Mm. Like, let's say you've got 10 CDs from a friend that's 10 years old.
Yeah.
One of those is probably bad.
Yeah.
That's true, but who backs up on spanning
anymore?
Across CDs anymore?
Well, this was a while ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you get a 500 gig hard drive for like $100 online somewhere, that's going to either entirely work or it won't.
Right.
But if you do constant backups, you're going to be very quickly notified if the hard drive dies. So I think we should move on because your data.
My recommendation, by the way,
yes.
If you're not a geek out there, rest of humanity, befriend one. But when you do that,
start doing a radio show with a bunch of geeks, it really helps you out.
Yeah, but when you do that, be a real friend to them because you don't want to treat your geek like the truck that you only want to use on moving day.
Exactly.
So how do you treat your geek friends well so that they stay friendly with you? What do you do?
I don't know. I think I feed them sometime. I don't know.
Like feed.
Be nice to them.
Yeah, you're funny.
I don't like every time I have a tech problem, I'm not constantly going to you guys with tech.
You're
problems.
Interested in the entire solution, not just the solution.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Geeks seem to like the whole dialogue about how the problem exists and where it came from and where it's going, or at least the ones I talk to are.
Yeah.
Right.
And to be constantly treated like the Geek Squad or like tech support.
Mm-hmm. So you guys notice I'm not wearing Google Glass today?
I do notice that.
I had to send it off to Google because I'm going to get Google Glass 2.0, the new version, which has an earbud now.
Oh, okay.
I hear. Now and it just hasn't been sent back to
it
me. I'm kind of jonesing for it. Can you see the paleness and the darkness of my teeth and the
There's
paleness
sort
of my
like
skin?
There's sort of like a white spot across where you're
It must be
Glass
horrible
is.
For you to have to go several days without Google Glass.
Without a computer on my face?
Oh, my God.
You know, so
Speaking
wearable tech.
Of, yeah, wearable tech.
Yeah.
What's going on? I've seen the ads for the fun little kind of like, you know, communicator-looking things.
Yeah.
Yeah, the watch.
There are Android smartwatches. Right now, I've heard that they're pretty underwhelming, but I expect that to change. I don't know if it's going to take off and become this huge thing, but it's...
I would say that my consensus on sharing Google Glass with people is, oh, and in the sense that it's amazing, and then it's a little underwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you actually use Google Glass for a long time, there's nothing really amazing about
things.
It, right? It's kind of cool. Kind of like these watches. I think that you can kind of go, well, it's not a big deal. You see text messages on them, and you can see your email on them, and you can control your audio on it.
Well, I mean, like the performance and things like that, you know?
And I think that the tricky part about this is that It's rare that a technology comes in full blast and changes the world.
That's
it's
true.
Normally kind of a subtle thing. I mean, take the MP3 revolution, right? We had MP3 devices that were like, oh, that's really cool. You can have your music on it. Not all your music, kind of. And then slowly over time, that is now just everywhere. MP3 devices are not, you don't even think about them anymore.
Yeah.
But they are essential. We all have MP3 players on our persons all the time now. And before, it was kind of a cool idea. If I was going running, I could bring that. That's neat. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, whose device do you want to use for your entire music collection? Because we all have giant copies of music with us all the time. So these changes, though majorly different in the world, don't always come across as a big thing at first.
Yeah.
I think wearable tech and in general the Internet of Things, where everything becomes kind of, well, let's talk about wearable tech. I think that having more, the more subtle the thing is, I think the more important it is in some ways. I think the Google Glass's failing point is that it's so dominant in the social space. Like people look at me weird when I wear it. But these watches are much more subtle. Ben, you don't have one, right?
Neither a watch nor Google Glass.
Do you have any wearable devices besides your phone? I would kind of argue that your phone is kind of a wearable device in the sense that you always have it with
you. It's in a pocket. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I personally don't feel a strong desire. I'm actually, strangely enough, I'm more of an analog person. I prefer to be disconnected from the world of technology as much as I can be, actually. I don't really like the go aesthetic.
You don't want to be plugged in all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd like to go camping and not have notifications. Like, I kind of want to integrate that as much as I can into my life because I work in computers. I spend a lot of time staring at expensive light bulbs, screens, right?
So you won't be installing the Google Tooth.
No, I won't be into the Google Tooth. We're also going to see a lot of smart gadgets as we see every year. Like, where I think we're going to see more health monitors, and like there's an electric toothbrush that connects up to your Android device or something like that.
Yeah, through Bluetooth tells you which teeth you've actually brushed and how long you've brushed them and things of that nature.
Yeah, but really, shouldn't you know that
toothbrush is like $100 to $200, right? It's an expensive electronic toothbrush. It is crazy at this point, that idea.
Yeah.
But at some future point, all of us, I sound insane saying this, all of us will have smart toothbrushes. Because why wouldn't you? Like, it becomes less the question of why would you do that, do you want to not have one?
I disagree.
Because Consumer Reports did an article, they rated a bunch of electronic toothbrushes, and then they found out that if, you know, you had to spend 30 seconds in each quadrant of your tooth for the electric toothbrush to work well. And the same was true of the manual toothbrush.
Yes.
If you just brushed your teeth properly.
Okay, let me put it this way. You can drive a car without automatic, cruise control.
Yeah.
Right? You can do that.
Yeah.
Do cars come without cruise control?
I think a good number.
Not very many. Less and less every year. The point is that because it's become less expensive to do, and we can do it, we're going to do it. And in fact, now the electronic cruise control system that are in, you know, high-end cars at this point, do auto detection of cars in front of you and will slow your vehicle down for you and actually emergency brake for you. So now this becomes, it's the barrier of, is it a drivable car? Is it not? It's an assisted device. Toothbrushes are like that too. You don't think that you need an electronic toothbrush. I think it's ridiculous. I kind of laugh at the idea. But also I know that why wouldn't we have them is probably a better question.
I think some things that might be the case for, but some things that might not be the case for.
The only thing that I really take issue with is when you say at some point everyone will have them. I think a lot of people will have them. I think it'll be cheap to have them. But honestly, a manual toothbrush will brush your teeth.
Okay.
Also,
I was an early adapter of phones, Ben.
Yes.
Of cell phones. Well, the first one I knew, of people that I knew, I was the first one to have one, right?
Sure.
And everybody, the perspective was the same arguments you guys are making about the toothbrush.
But
same thing was happening
with the phone.
That's
different.
No,
that's
it's
a disruptive technology because before we had cell phones, there was no way to do what a cell phone did. We had pocket pagers, but you couldn't have a conversation with somebody
you'd go pick up a phone.
I know, you'd have to go find a phone. You'd go to a payphone. You'd go home. You'd go to the office. You call someone from there. You couldn't call someone from your car. You couldn't call someone from
the... But you are communicating from a perspective that everyone has phones now, and therefore it's obvious.
I'm saying that in the future,
everybody will have electronic toothbrushes.
Hold on.
It will happen.
I just want to finish.
Yeah.
Right now, you can clean your teeth really well using a manual toothbrush. You could clean your teeth with manual toothbrushes 20 years ago. 20 years, 100 years from now, manual toothbrushes will still work and they'll still do the same thing that the smart electronic toothbrushes we're talking about do now. So it's a difference between cell phones.
It's not true.
Cell phones do something that you can't do without a cell phone. But electronic toothbrushes
I'm not talking about electronic toothbrushes. I'm talking about intelligent toothbrushes.
Sure.
And this is a great example of ridiculousness because why would you possibly want one of those? I think that
if you can afford one, it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, that's another point.
I think the manual toothbrush and the basic car without cruise control will always be around for people who cannot afford the fancy fancy.
Agreed. There will always be kind of a lower end product that is not as fancy, definitely, for a total price point thing. But what I'm saying is you do not live in a world where everybody has an intelligent toothbrush and gets the benefits from that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do live in a world that's like that, then it's weird not to have it.
Yeah.
Just like a cell phone. You lived in a world for a while that didn't have cell phones, and it was fine. I'm either at home, or I'm at work, or I'm at school, or I'm at a friend's house, and there are phones everywhere. I can use all these phones. No big deal. Now, the idea of switching back to a place where you can't make a phone call while you're driving, whoa, that's crazy. But the truth is, we lived in that world, and it wasn't a big deal. I never wanted a mobile phone.
Yeah.
I was never going, oh, I really want that. It was kind of a cool technology thing. I was interested in it. But now that everybody has one, I don't even know how.
Everybody doesn't have one, mister. I mean,
everyone in my circle, all my colleagues.
I'm just hearing privilege,
It is
in
a
privilege conversation.
This is a completely a privilege thing. It's completely ridiculous. I grant it. And, you know, yes. So I'm not trying to claim that the world is, you know, all at the same technical level that we are. But what I'm saying is that even though the toothbrush, the intelligent toothbrush, sounds ridiculous to us, in the future, I think they'll be everywhere.
I don't think it sounds ridiculous, but you do raise some good points. Another thing to mention, to bring up, which you just did, is that this entire conversation revolves around the first world, right?
That's so embarrassing.
First world conversation.
Anyway.
Oh,
there will be more of them. That's enough to say. There will be more of them.
There will. I would agree with there will be more of them. Absolutely.
Not everywhere, not everyone, but
more of
them.
There'll be more of everything.
Yeah.
Well, except for the things there will be less
of. There'll
be
more hatchets in the future, too. It'll be
So wait, we've spent like 10 minutes talking about toothbrushes.
We got into that one.
I know, and I hate them.
Maybe after this next break, can we talk about something more, well, not as toothbrushy?
Well, we got some more time before the next break.
We got two minutes.
Let's go over just a couple more of the Internet of Things.
Okay.
My honey's got a 3D printer. He's trying to figure out how to really put it to use.
Oh, I wouldn't say that's an Internet of Things part.
That's a thing.
That's a thing.
That can be on the internet.
But the Internet of Things idea is that Every average device will have an IP address and will be connected to the internet. So your refrigerator and your toaster know about each other and can communicate.
Well, wouldn't that be true for 3D printers also?
Yeah, the 3D printer is more traditionally very connected device. But I think, I mean, the 3D printer space is a pretty big one, I think.
I
think that's happening. What's interesting about 3D printers is that we're seeing, like on Etsy and such, people can buy items that have been printed on 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more we have 3D printers around us, the less we will ship actual final products and the more custom products will exist.
Yeah.
So the handmade thing space is going to explode, I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. And we'll see more people doing stuff with their hands, creating their own things, and using tools like a 3D printer to do that.
You know what the Internet of Things makes me think of?
What?
That 80s movie, The Brave Little Toaster. Do you remember that?
No.
It's like a toaster and a blanket and a lamp and a radio and a vacuum cleaner journey to the city and like try to find their owner and all that stuff. I mean,
Bonnie, has Bren lost it?
Why is he talking about
this? What's it called?
You're talking about these devices. Toaster. You're talking about how your toaster will be able to communicate with your refrigerator and everything. I'm just imagining Toy Story, The Brave Little Toaster.
That's fantastic.
That does seem sort of like an early woo of Pixar, but okay. all right, so you're saying that 3D printers are more traditionally associated with being connected, and the Internet of Things is really about just sort of everyday objects becoming more smart than they might need.
Yeah, we're
to.
Seeing
fuzzy,
new technologies emerging, like the low power of Bluetooth is actually built into a lot of devices at this point, the receiving end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a low powered Bluetooth device can have basically no power consumption in the sense that you can take a little tiny piece of chip and put it in on a device and let it not be powered for 3 or 4 months and it's still useful.
Mm-hmm.
And what that allows us to do is pretty interesting. Has pretty interesting side effects of having trackable systems. I mean, an example of something we've done this with for a long time is currently our gas meters.
Yeah.
If you've ever watched somebody read a gas meter around your home, they actually have a long probe and they kind of take the probe and they kind of stick it near the concrete box outside your house and they get some kind of figure and they walk away.
Yeah.
And what's actually happening is there is a very low power wireless transfer protocol called, I think it's a Zigbee protocol. And that is the same type of thing. There's a very small battery or no battery in the receiving side or the meter side and you can access it whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And though it seems kind of silly to have that technology as it emerges everywhere, like knowing whether you've left your bag somewhere because you happen to have one of these devices, and when your phone gets far enough away from it, it says, hey, you got a problem here. Mm-hmm. So that means you've left your jacket on a hook somewhere or you've left your bag somewhere.
Okay.
So that kind of memory stuff is useful.
Mm-hmm.
It also, with Bluetooth low power, you can actually produce a network in your home and actually know where things are directly. I don't think this stuff is going to be mainstream in 2014. We're going to see a lot more stories about it. We'll cover a lot more things in 2014 about these things emerging. Eventually, I think they will be.
I've got a question. And this may be sort of the purely hypothetical space, and we're about to go to a break, so maybe we'll talk about it after the break. But given that things like that are going to be doing more of our sort of minute thinking, I have to remember my jacket, I have to remember the phone number, like that kind of memory is not being used for that anymore. Assuming that we're not just going to turn to mush, what will we be using that memory for?
Ooh, interesting.
This is Geek Speak on 88.9 KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch. With me in the air room is Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. And oh, the conversation we're having.
Bonnie, you just asked this great question. Like, since we don't have the ability to remember phone numbers anymore, because why would you? Because your phone calls you because you know the person's name. And in fact, you don't even need to know the person's name because it keeps a history of when you last spoke to them, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. You can just look through your history and go, oh, yeah, that's that person. Here's a picture of them.
Right.
So
devices are carrying much of the load of kind of the busy work memory brain exercising that we've been doing.
At one point, there was a lot of worth to being able to remember nice phone numbers and people's names and all those things. Mm-hmm. And slowly
or
over
entire
time.
Cultures, oral histories, for instance.
Well, that's only because you needed
example.
To.
Right. So is it unimportant to do those things and therefore it's not
Does
a
that mean,
trait that matters?
Well,
so,
are we using less of our brain or are we just going to use it for something else?
It seems like there are two sides of the argument in my brain. There's the... We don't need to do this now. We don't need to remember this now. We don't need to know this now. So therefore, we're going to turn into mush and it'll be a Wally world and we won't know, we won't want to think. So we won't think. We'll have everything door thinking for us. The other side of the argument could be, since we don't need to do all of these things that otherwise would occupy us, that frees us up to do other things or to think about other things or to work in
and
more abstract spaces.
And then it comes down to what's worthwhile as being a person, right? I mean, we don't anymore all know how to do all the chores around our house. We have devices that do that for us, right? We shuck corn. I don't know. Skills that at one point everyone had, right? Mm-hmm. Chopping wood, let's say, is a good example.
Farming.
Basic farming is a perfect example. It used to be that everyone knew how to do that.
Because if you didn't, you died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You might not be an expert on it, but you knew how to do it. And now, not everybody does that. Though there is a trend to have that be important again. So the question is, for example, a lot of people I know are farming now, or at least producing their own food, right? We do that. You're doing that now, Ben. And
with some degree of success.
Some degree of success. But I guess the point is that there's a worth level there, right? I could imagine a society where no one knew how to do that, and it was all done automatically, and people were doing other things. But it seems to me that I something would be lacking there. Something would be lost.
So is that because you have an intrinsic need to do it, or is it because it's nostalgic for you? It's kind of like
a gap that you're feeling.
Yeah.
Growing and making things is important.
There's just balance in the universe.
There's my mantra for today.
It sounds like we're all in for the idea that no, our brains will not turn to mush. We'll just be using it for something else.
Sure.
And I'm interested to see over the years what that turns out to be.
Yeah. What I think is really important is that we foster within our society and within our children a desire to learn and a desire to grow and a desire to be curious, because that, at least for me growing up, that's what drove me to be interested in the things that I'm interested in. I didn't get a degree in computers, nothing of the sort. I got a degree in theater arts, right? I'm not doing any theater right now.
You perform every week on the radio.
Well, that's okay, sure. But I could have gotten a major in radio,
right.
But I didn't. And here I am on the radio. But the things that I am good at that I didn't study formally, I'm good at because I was curious and interested in those things.
Yes.
Right?
And important traits.
Yeah. So I think that's it's most education
okay.
is
so the
most important thing.
The mechanism will be intact. The curiosity mechanism.
Could
yeah,
be, yes.
I can't imagine it not being so.
Yeah.
Go learn to code.
Hey, a quick note. We got a call from John and Bonnie Doon who pointed out that cell phones have been going on in the third world for a long time now. So just the general concept of cell phones is not just a first world thing.
Yeah.
My point was more toward the bells and whistles that are necessary for the technology.
Yeah, like the electric toothbrush that integrates with your Android phone. Is that going to be in the third world countries in the next 50 years?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't...
Do we count them as part of it?
Yes.
Lyle says yes.
Maybe.
Okay,
so
established. Now we can move on.
Yes. There's another bigger picture thing, which
we'll get to later.
Okay, sure.
Okay. So I do want to talk about, you mentioned, Ben, that there's sort of like a balancing thing that happens, that as we move forward, some people get interested again in making or farming. Mm-hmm. That seems to be happening now, thanks to Edward Snowden, because of data privacy.
There's definitely more interest in that area all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
Snowden, definitely most important figure in 2013. And I think, 2014, we're going to see a major change in how we think about privacy and secrecy.
Yeah, we're already seeing it.
Yeah.
What do you think how will that trend develop into something, do you think, in the coming year?
Gosh, how do I want it to?
Yeah, how do you want it to? Let's talk about that first.
How do I want it to?
I talked
a little bit about this. I mean, first off, we know we have a password failure point. At this point, I kind of take it as read that passwords have failed. We've gotten to the point where our minds can't handle passwords large enough, the computers can't crack easily. So,
from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
Like, if you aren't... If someone's not trying to crack into your Gmail account because you're an enemy of the state or something like that, you're probably going to be okay. But if someone really, really, really wanted to crack into your Gmail account or your whatever account, passwords are not going to be as good of a deterrent as they used to be.
Mm. So I would argue that automated password uselessness is already here, and it will get worse.
Yeah.
I'm really talking about is that right now, yes, a human brain can easily remember a password that would be very hard to discover and figure out and break. That's totally true. You can do one. You might be able to do four of these. You can't do 80 of them. And right now, you might be associated with maybe, your bank and you're going to get up to a count of like 6 or 7 pretty quickly. Almost everyone in the first world has 6 or 7 passwords that are actually important to them. Mm-hmm. They're currently doing that. Most people are doing that by having the same password all places. Hacking happens all the time where a password gets leaked or the problem gets compromised, and all of a sudden your entire system is compromised. So that problem is the password problem, I argue, and we need to get rid of it. And it used to be that we really liked the idea. I personally, at this show, we talked about the idea that you'd have a password authentication system like a central repository authentication system like Facebook, right? And everything you just sync up through Facebook and hit Facebook and approve it, and then Facebook would be your manager system.
Yeah, that's the login using Facebook, login using Google.
OAuth 2 is the terminology, the technology we normally talk about in the space, even though they don't always implement it perfectly. Anyway, I just had this problem a couple days ago where I'd been signing up for hundreds of services. I sign up for everything, right? Because of the show, I try everything. And I get benefit from that, but also pain from that. The other day on my Facebook account, a picture showed up that I would never post intentionally to my Facebook crowd. And it showed up, and I got like a text message from my fiance saying, hey, someone just mentioned that this is probably not something you wanted to post, and it wasn't. And it was one of these apps that I had signed up for at one point that gave privilege to Facebook that I don't know if the application's even online anymore. I can't remember what it was that did it. I'm kind of at this bad point. But anyway, I had disabled 25 applications on Facebook that have an authentication for me to clean them up, hoping that one of those was the one. In reality, there's 30 more that actually I want to trust. Yeah. So this idea of management of identity and passwords, this is going to be a big important space. And the Snowden leak stuff has pushed this idea of privacy into a mainstream importance. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there'll be products and services for people around this space. And this is the kind of... So these are all connected.
Both useful ones and ones that are playing on the fear to get your dollar.
Definitely.
That are not useful, but maybe doing exactly the opposite.
Yeah. And it is the problem is a big problem.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is the idea of you owning your own identity piece. It used to be that I thought that PGP, pretty good privacy, was going to be the standard for this. I now think it's probably going to be something like SQRL, the SQRL protocol devised by Steve Gibson. That's probably going to take over, this idea that your personal device will have your credentials management system, mm-hmm. and you'll have a side effect of your personal device will actually be your identity. And that's a little creepy what potentially could happen from that. But I don't see a future in which that won't be the case.
Well, and that's where the security of that personal device that becomes your identity, that seems super tentative.
Yes. And right now our phones are way susceptible.
Well, the kill switch? Everyone's talking about, why isn't there a kill switch?
Are there, for what?
For phones. Like, if it winds up in someone else's hands, you should be able to remotely kill the phone so that people don't use
Apple has that.
Apple has that, but not everyone has that.
Yeah.
And it's been
a
struggle to get that as a standard.
No? Yeah, I mean, yeah. And then you're also still trusting the device to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're also trusting, in this example, Apple to not get hacked and have a bajillion phones all killed.
I'm pretty pessimistic on this whole space.
Yeah,
unfortunately, this is the one thing I think that, and I think it's a side effect of it being a consumer product controlled by corporations and giving it to us. Mm-hmm. Their motivations are completely inverted from our privacy motivations, right? Yeah. And because of that, the systems are designed by people that want to take advantage of your privacy in some ways, then of course the systems aren't going to be very good at that. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in the thought process behind this, I highly recommend reading and listening to Cory Doctorow. He's got some great books and fantasy books about this kind of space. And I think it's important for people to be aware of it. I'm hoping the Snowden stuff is actually going to cause people to learn. I don't have good solutions. Like right now, all of our phones are completely hackable. And that's just the reality of the situation right now.
Yeah.
Kind of scary. This is great, and maybe we'll cover it in the future show, release about products that the U.S. government has that allows you to target company phones and take them over. And it's kind of amazing how simple it is to do those things. Hmm. That's kind of depressing.
Yeah. Darn. Oh,
Ben,
darn.
Ben, chime in here. I'm just crawling into a sad, dark hole.
That's so sad.
Cool.
We should have some music on this show.
Right.
Well, how do you think that passwords and security and...
I think you covered it very well, and my mind is just...
it's going somewhere.
My mind went into a somewhat music geeky realm. Can I give a quick mention for something that's completely unrelated?
I would love it.
Other than the happy-sad dichotomy. There's this guy, there's this team, I think two people, who use auto-tuning software to take either movie soundtracks or popular songs and change them from if they're a happy song, like in a major key, they change them so they're in the minor key. And then if they're in a minor key, they change them so they're in the major key. If you search for major versus minor, and I'll put it up on the GeekSpeak site, it's really, really funny. Like the other day the reason I thought of this is because, you know, the Godfather theme? It's a very sad and woeful kind of a theme that might be playing over the last segment we just did about passwords and how horrible life is and where everything's going down the tubes. Well, I listened to the major version of that, and it was so generic and happy. It was it was amazing. So anyway, that's my random contribution to this conversation.
We'll put that on the GeekSpeak page. It's geekspeak.org. We mention all the stuff we talk about during the show.
Yeah.
Where do we go from there? Let's get to...
Let's tie this
Let's
back.
Let's go broad. Like, can we head for space or something?
The notes I've taken is, do not do a prediction show again. I've got that one over here. I predict I will forget that before the next year.
Yeah. I predict you will, too.
You know, I wish we had made predictions
for
the last year's show, because it would be really interesting.
We've got years of these. Let's talk about 3D printing.
Not last year, I looked.
Optimistic space. Okay? So why is 3D printing important at all? Why does it matter, and why is it going to be important in 2014?
You can prototype things in your living room. You know, you can buy a 3D printer and you can build things that you otherwise would have to buy, especially things that would be plastic, right? Mm-hmm. Not so much metal. You can't fabricate a pistol or another 3D printer using a 3D printer because you need motors, you need other sorts of things that you can't necessarily print.
Okay. Yeah, you can print a firearm with a 3D printer. You just it has to be a expensive 3D printer. Yeah, you can.
People okay. Do, well,
unfortunately.
Fine. you still need bullets, right?
Yeah, you still need gunpowder.
You can't 3D print a bullet.
No,
with gunpowder.
You can do the bullet. You can do the chamber. You can do all that. You just can't do the powder.
Yeah,
right.
So it's
you have to go to the hardware store to get
that. It's like a very limited, very slow.
But let's talk about
a noisy Star Trek replicator.
This is why it's exciting to me. Right now, we live in a world where the technology around us is really complicated, and even the tool sets necessary to work on the technology is complicated, right? So having the right tools to open up your iPhone, for example, is a little strange. Mm-hmm. If you have a 3D printer, you can make the tools necessary to do that, right? So there's this, it's a new, it brings your ability to do home type of work to the level of expertise that exists in the world around you.
Well, a chance for a sort of peer-to-peer sharing of the knowledge that you need to get things done.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's exciting.
But and you can go back in time and you can say, okay, well, back, I don't know a time frame, but maybe 30, 40 years ago, if you wanted to print something, you had to go to a printer to have it printed. And then you could buy a really expensive printer and do it in your living room. And then the printers get really cheap. And now the printers are so cheap that you can buy them for $20. And then they really get you on the ink costs.
And keep in mind, you can do a 3D model with a 3D printer, work on it, print it your own home. By the way, the prices are going to be cheap enough this year where it could be a gift you gave to somebody, in the sense that if it's, you know, for a child, if you wanted to spend something like $400, you could get a 3D printer in your home. That's kind of amazing, yeah. Right? These things that it produces are kind of not very durable. But after you've worked on the model and figured it out and printed it, you can then have it printed somewhere in steel or titanium, right? Mm-hmm. So that's possible, too.
It's what you're talking about, prototypes. You can make a prototype.
I've got a really quick prediction that I just want to throw out there, which is the private space industry. I'm really excited to see Virgin Galactic doing private suborbital space flights,
sure,
where you can go and you can spend, I don't know, $200,000, or maybe the price will come down, and go into zero G for 6 minutes. That's a really expensive flight.
I'll finish up with a nice prediction, too. I predict next week we'll have a wonderful episode of Geek Speak all about tech news, and I'll also possibly taking your calls with questions and comments about technology.
Yeah, like a real Geek Speak show.
That's our
week.
Prediction.
This turned into philosophy speak for a little while.
Yeah, it was.
It did. Well, we got into the issues.
We did.
That's okay.
Virtual currency, of course.
Bitcoins too. Yeah. Currency. I mean, just recently, Overstock, one of the big major retailers, accepts Bitcoins. So we'll see that. We'll see that taken off, hopefully.
More of that. Stay tuned for further episodes of Geek Speak. This has been Geek Speak for January 11th, 2014. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So please feel free to reuse our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit geekspeak.org. And thank you for listening.